You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married. Hey, Ron, you know how we always have ideas and we have all these entrepreneurial things that we'd like to do, but we never have the time, or we think it's going to be too much money, or there's one reason or another that we don't do it?
Well, sure. And Dr. Ron and Linda on the road in the City of Lights, Las Vegas, and at the MGM at your conference for Performa.
Right. And so we are really, really pleased today to be able to have a conversation with the founder of Performa, which is the largest print and promotional supplier in North America. And actually, they have gone worldwide, I believe, right, Greg?
That's right.
Okay. So we are just really honored to have Greg here to talk with us, because here's a man who had an entrepreneurial thought some years ago, and he made it a reality. And, you know, I love your story, Greg. It's so impressive. So I want to learn from you. Tell us what you did, how you started. You know, what was the whole process that got you from there to where you are today?
Sure, happy to do that, Ron. Linda, thank you for having me on your show here, and happy to share. But I would say, to your point, what you said right up front, the number one reason, sometimes people say, you know, why is Performa this $500 million successful franchise in our industry today? And I say the number one reason is because I got big balls. I'm brave. And I say, I'll do things that other people might say that I had that idea, but they never implemented on it. And so the number one reason isn't because I'm smart, that it isn't because I had money. It's because I was brave enough to try something that other people just wouldn't try. So my story goes all the way back to 1977. I graduated from college, went to work for what was then a Big Eight CPA firm on the audit team. And when I graduated, a good buddy of mine and a fraternity brother and I shared an apartment together. And he was working for a distributor in the industry, and I was doing auditing, and I hated auditing. I loved studying accounting. I hated doing it. And he hated his boss. And so on Friday nights, you know, we're 22 or 23 years old. On Friday nights, we'd go out looking for dates for Saturday night. So we're at the bar, and inevitably, he would talk about how he hated his boss, and I would talk about how I really didn't enjoy accounting, and I didn't see that being my future. And to be candid with you, I didn't really understand what he did as a distributor, because when you study accounting, you more study cost accounting in a manufacturing environment. And so I more had a prejudice that most businesses manufactured stuff. And I didn't realize there were businesses that had no overhead, no warehouses, no equipment, no expensive employees, that just sold stuff and represented hundreds of other plants that had all those burdens. But the more I would listen to him, and he'd tell me about $20,000 orders and $50,000 orders with 40% gross profit, and it got my attention as we were out there drinking. And I'd say to him, now, tell me what you do. Tell me what is this business. And the more he described how the distributorship worked and how distribution worked and how there's all these suppliers that only sell through distributors, I thought to myself, I said to him, I think we can do this. You know the industry, you know sales, I know accounting, let's do it. So we had that idea about 6 months after we graduated from college, and we decided to do it.
Well, what was the idea?
It was just to start a distributorship.
Just to start your own distributorship.
Exactly.
Of some sort of products or many products.
Printing and
printing and promotion.
He was in the industry we're in, distributing what we sell today. And so the idea was, we're just going to start our own. He was going to leave the company he was at, and we were going to start something together. He was going to be sales, and I was going to be accounting. So we each put in $100, and we bought a phone answering machine and some stationery and a used file cabinet. Now, we used that stationery to send out to about 60 suppliers, and most of them gave us a little line of credit. And so in 1978, we started Performa together, from an apartment with our phone answering machine, our file cabinet, and about 60 suppliers that agreed to give us a little line of credit to start knocking on doors.
And that line of credit is so important.
what's huge, right? Yeah. It's huge because the customers typically pay us as distributors a little bit slower than the plants want to get paid.
Right, right. So then you became a distributor.
We became a distributor and we worked hard, right? So in addition to having, you know, bravery, you got to work hard. There's nothing that comes easy. And we worked hard. So by 1983, we had started to make Inc. Magazine's list.
Wow.
Of the Inc. 500 fastest growing companies. 3 years in a row. So 83, 84, 85. The secret to making Inc. Magazine's list. Now it's 5,000, but back then it was only the Inc. 500. The secret is kind of have a bad first year.
Well, you make me feel bad because my business has made it a number of times as well.
Exactly, and we're proud of you. Very proud of you. So we were in Cleveland, Ohio, doing very well. I think we were $3 or $4 million by that time. And we decided to expand to Columbus, Ohio. And so we went down there and we found about 7 or 8 candidates to interview. And then we went back the next week and we reduced it down to about 3 people to interview. And then we picked the one candidate and we went down that following week to give that person their offer and start talking about onboarding, transitioning, and opening up an office in Columbus. So we went down for this big meeting to start expanding into Columbus, Ohio. And this guy, who was about our age, said to us when we arrived, you know, I've been really thinking about our meeting, and I've been really thinking about, you know, working with you guys. And the more I think about it, I really like you guys, and I really like your story. And I like your story so much, I want to do what you did. I want to start my own business. So he turned down our offer, and he started his own distributorship, which could be disappointment. And I think maybe sometimes people turn disappointment into negativity, but I kept thinking to myself, how could we have maybe had a different structure where we could have helped him own his own business in Columbus and yet be partnered or affiliated with us in some way? And around the same time, there was something else going on. Because we had made Inc. Magazine's list of the Inc. 500 3 years in a row, they contacted us and wanted to interview us. And I don't remember how the story came out, but I had a unusual collections technique that worked. You know, we had no money, and people were paying us slow, and some people paid us very slow, and we needed to bring the money in, or we were going to go out of business. So in my fraternity, I had a fraternity brother whose name was Elio DiPaolo. And I had this notion, I had this idea, and so I started calling up the customers. I say, hello, my name is Elio DiPaolo. My friend Greg Amazzello, he telling me you no pay your bill. I think you need to really pay your bill. And I think that's illegal, as I look back on it.
I think I would call it extortion, Greg.
I think so. I think the statute of limitations is up. So, but they did a very cool story about these two knuckleheads that graduated from college, took $200, and built this multi-million dollar business. And as a result of that article, people started inquiring to us if we were interested in franchising. I had never thought of that up until we started getting those inquiries. But I thought, wow, maybe that would have been the path that we could have taken that fellow in Columbus and brought him on as a franchise. That might have been the right structure. So in 84, I started studying franchising. I got involved in the International Franchise Association, started interviewing other franchisees, other franchisors, and I thought, let's go for it. Let's give this a try. And so in 1985, we introduced the pro forma franchising model to the distribution industry.
Now, how did you come up with the name pro forma?
Well, the primary product in 1978 was business forms. I mean, those barely exist anymore. But back in the day, before computers and before people had copiers in their offices, people need to have all these multiple part forms, right, with carbons in between them or carbonless NCR type forms. And so pro forma, by the way, so pro forma, most people have heard the word, like it's the most commonly used word in the third section of the Wall Street Journal, but most people can't define it. So they know they've heard the word, but unless you're a lawyer and accountant, you couldn't really define it. And so it was kind of fortuitous. So I just said, let's call it pro forma, like professional forms or professional forms management was what I thought the name would be. And interestingly enough, even in 1985, when we started franchising, we were nothing. We were nobodies, right? people would say, I think I've heard of your company, because they've heard the word, but they really couldn't define it. So they didn't know they hadn't heard of our company. They had only heard of that word.
Proforma. You know, it's interesting because I never knew the reason that you called it Proforma, but really a Proforma fits with our industry of printing because it is basically like a proof. So it's an example that somebody gives. A Proforma is basically like a proof, which we use heavily in our industry anyway.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
So then, in 1985, you started Proforma and you... How did you get the first franchise?
So in the beginning, we wanted to recruit people that were already in the industry. That was the original vision. To recruit people like that guy in Columbus that wanted to own his own business. In franchising, there's two kinds of franchising, actually. One is more traditional, like most people think of when an unhappy corporate executive decides they want to leave their job. And they're going to buy a franchise. They don't know what industry. They don't know that industry, but they buy a franchise to learn the industry and to have a success formula and a brand behind them. That's one kind. We call that traditional franchising. The other kind is what's called conversion franchising. And conversion franchising has nothing to do with being a religious experience. It's it's where people in the industry join the franchising organization. They're already in the industry, but they want to be affiliated with a larger organization for marketing tools, for buying resources, and sometimes, like at Proforma, for our back office resources. And so we started marketing in the industry looking for franchises. And it was a scary time because the National Association at the time that represented the distributors on the business form side, which is no longer in business, or it's rebranded itself many times, but it doesn't matter. They reached out to our suppliers because they saw franchising as a threat to their model of being a trade association. And they were very afraid of us. And they told our suppliers they didn't want our suppliers to do business with us. In fact, I got a phone call. So in 1985, as we're introducing our franchising concept, and I'm all excited about it, I got a phone call from one of our largest suppliers saying, Greg, you're really creating a lot of noise in this industry, and we're being asked not to do business with you.
Wow, that's just really incredible. How did you overcome that?
Man, I stayed up at night staring at the ceiling, but I thought, I am not letting anybody get me down.
Good for you.
We have a great idea. I think it's a great idea that fit well in the industry. And we were lucky enough in those early days to find two sales reps that were in the industry, like that guy in Columbus, but not the guy in Columbus, who joined us. So we found two people that were in the industry. They joined us and they had instant success. They pretty quickly got to $500,000 and then $1 million a year. But then most of the industry, as we continue to try to push, mostly had the reaction to us, like, why would we join you two 30-year-old punks? And so it wasn't good, right? So I thought, well, we better go after traditional franchises. We've got a great story to tell. It's a great industry. And so probably the next 30 or 40 franchises that joined us after those two first folks were outside of the industry, people that we had to teach the industry from the ground up. And then we started enjoying some success. And then along the way, we started getting more inquiries from the industry. And slowly in the early 90s, our conversion franchising model really started to take hold. But the one thing that happened that really helped it take hold was I bought out my partner. That happens a lot in businesses, right? Partnerships don't endure.
Sure.
I bought out my partner. I'll never say a bad word about him. Great guy. We had a lot of fun in those early years. I never would be here without him. But it was time for us to part ways. And our banks came to us after they realized what I had done, and they said, you know, Greg, I think you're buying him out with our money, not yours. And they were right. And they said, we don't want to be your bank anymore because you've broken our loan covenants. We don't understand your new business model. And this was back in the days where, you know, you got introduced to the banker of the month. Well, fortunately, I had been friends with Fred DeLuca, the guy that started Subway. I got to know him through the International Franchise Association. And Fred and I became friends, and we'd hang out after meetings. And he'd always say to me, hey, Greg, would you like to have an investor in your company? Because I think he wanted to be involved in things other than submarine sandwiches. And I always said no. However, when the bank said, you better go find some money or we're putting you under, I called up Fred and I said, Fred, you remember those conversations we used to have? And fortunately, Fred said, yeah, he was still very interested. After some dialogue, obviously, he became an investor in Proforma. And when he became an investor in Proforma, that gave us some cash that we needed. We were able to buy a beautiful 30,000 square foot building. But when Fred and Sub, the founder, co-founder of Subway, got involved, and that became news throughout our industry and all of the business world, it gave us instant credibility. And so, and really, and that was in 95, then we really started to see the concept very well accepted in the industry, very well accepted in the business opportunity markets, and really started to see some great dynamic growth.
You know, I'm really curious as to how you marketed the concept of the franchise model. What did you do? Did you put out ads? Was it word of mouth? How did you do that? How did you get that word out?
So we went to, back in the day, this is before there was the internet, right? So it's hard for maybe some of your young listeners to even imagine that there was a day that there wasn't such a thing. So we would go to these Own Your Own Business shows, which were very popular back in the day, standing next to stupid bubblegum machines and mink farms and Bic lighter machines and all kinds of goofy stuff. And we went to our first show, and we had no success. But there was a guy standing across from me that had a booth, and at the next show he was there again. I said, hey, how'd you do? Because these things were every week when it was show season. I said, he said he sold 5 deals last week. We sold none. I said, man, can I talk to you after the show? And he agreed to become a consultant to us. And one thing we learned was our industry is hard to explain, right? If you walk by a yogurt stand, you get it. You see the word yogurt and you get it. If you walk by a stand that says submarine sandwiches, you see it and you get it, right? Many franchise models, if you walk by a thing that says chicken, you know, you see it and you get it. But people didn't get us. And so he said, Greg, what you need to do is you need to get a booth that's up against the end where the drape still, I mean, the hall is bigger, but it's the end of the show, and put some chairs there. And then encourage people to come in and sit down and give them like just a little 5-minute seminar on the industry. And after a while, people are so tired, they'll sit down and listen to anything because they just want to sit down. And so as people would sit down and hear our story, they became interested, and then we would meet with them afterwards, after the show, you know, the next couple of days. And so that gave us a great opportunity to tell our story, sell our story, and sign people up.
You know what? When we come back, I just want to continue this conversation because your story is just amazing, and maybe we want to talk a little bit about some of the challenges. You've already indicated a couple of them and how you overcame those challenges.
Let's get some coffee.
I'm with you.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our Response to Active Shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to responsetoactiveshooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, responsetoactiveshooter.com, and be safe out there.
The Out Loud Perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, Greg Mazzillo, I've known you for 20 years now, and I've never heard the whole story that you just relayed about how you started. I knew pieces, but not all of it, and it's fascinating to me because the thing that I heard the most about what you said is you worked your fanny off. I mean, you didn't stop despite the obstructions. You didn't lay down and say it's over. You went after everything that you wanted, and you had a dream, and you kept pursuing it. And, you know, so often today, Greg, we don't see that with people. They really give up too soon. And you kept at it, and, you know, now here we are today. So I want to have you continue a little bit more about, you know, when in 95, you went ahead and you got some financing. Where did we go from there?
Well, 95, not only was it financing, because sometimes money by itself isn't helpful. So thankfully, the money came from somebody that was an expert in franchising, well-respected in franchising. And by the way, I think you guys might know, but Fred passed 2 years ago.
Oh, did not know that.
Very sad. Very young, obviously genius. One of the smartest people I've ever known in my life. And he was very helpful to us, not only with money and not only with it giving us more instant credibility in the industry, but he also, we would chat from time to time about the business, and he always had, he was an idea man, right?
So good mentorship was key here.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So I wanted to just get back into the challenges, because I was fascinated by the challenge when the industry is reaching out to people that are doing business with you and sort of putting the arm on them and saying, hey, you know, I don't know if you really want to do business with this guy. That must have been initially devastating to hear that. But how did you overcome that?
Well, I believed enough in our concept. And I believed enough that it would be successful. And fortunately, we were already doing some meaningful business with those suppliers who also believed. Now, that's a good thing and a bad thing. So I'll tell you what I mean. So the good thing was people believed in us. And even though they heard this guy, Greg Mazzillo, pro forma, has this nutty idea to franchise in an industry that had no franchise model in it at the time, so the good news was they believed in me. But after many years, a few other people came along with similar concepts, not the same concept. And unfortunately, those suppliers would say, well, we remember when Greg Mazzillo was telling us his idea for Proforma, and we thought it was kind of nutty, but we believed in him and stuck with him. And now they see these other people come along, and they think, well, that might be the next Greg Mazzillo in Proforma. So it makes it a little bit easier for people who have followed in our footsteps to be successful.
Well, and you've really created or recreated our industry, Greg, because, you know, I've been in the printing and promotional industry for over 40 years myself, 20 years with Proforma. I saw your face on the picture of a magazine, and it talked a little bit about franchising, but there was no such thing in those days, and this was in 1998. And in my life, I was in a point where, kind of like you were, I didn't like where I was working. I couldn't get things done fast enough, and everybody put obstructions in front of me to get things to my clients, and I no longer wanted that. So I knew that I wanted to have my own business, but here I am. I'm a single mom with three small children, and how do I do this without risking their future, my home, you know, all the financial things that you have to think about? So I saw this ad, and I called Proforma up, got John Campbell on the phone, your chief
franchise officer,
mm-hmm. And who's still with you today, which is a true testament to you. He was great. And, you know, really, I pulled the trigger on that immediately. I saw the value. I went for it. the financial backing that you give to people mm-hmm. that allowed me not to have to risk my home and my future with my family, but yet be able to have my dream. And you always told us that it's about having our dreams, whatever our dreams are, because everybody's is different, right? So, you know, to me, this has been a family to me. The people that are part of this organization, in my opinion, in our industry, are second to none. And you're right. Lots of other people have come along in the industry and they've tried to emulate you, but nobody has done it. They've come close to it. They are, but there's pieces missing. And in some of the organizations, the actual members are kind of competitors to one another. We are not like that in Performa. So we have a uniqueness that I think that the rest of the industry doesn't have. And that's to your credit, because always, you know, leaders lead from the front, and we've had to have that in Performa. So my kind of point in our conversation, as well as learning, you know, what you did and wanting to know where you're going to take it from here, is that these opportunities and what you did from $200 are still available to people today in all kinds of ways if they just take that first step, right?
For sure. For sure. There's lots of different paths that people can go down. You know, it's interesting. So now that we have some modicum of success, my wife, Vera, and I are very involved in the entrepreneurial community. I like to preach what I call the achievable, believable gospel of entrepreneurship. Because what you're just saying, I think a lot of people don't know what's possible. I think a lot of people are afraid to try. And so we're very fortunate to get on many campuses, University of Notre Dame, the little college I went to, Case Western Reserve University, University of Florida, and be able to meet with these entrepreneurial groups. And how lucky these young folks are today. I didn't even know how to spell entrepreneur when I started Proforma. And these young folks today in colleges, you can't have a college without having an entrepreneurship club, an entrepreneurship study track, and lots of support, including entrepreneurship pitch competitions. In fact, my wife and I sponsored the $50,000 Gator Big Idea competition at the University of Florida. And so it is a great time for young folks. Not that it's not a great time for old folks, because, you know, us more seasoned people sometimes bring the wisdom that younger folks don't have. But what a great time for younger folks to be able to study entrepreneurship, take their idea, kind of foment it, if you will, with mentorship in the college campus, pitch it, not only learning to pitch it to, you know, the world, if you will, but also pitch it to investors. It's a great season.
And what a unique time, because our economy is just exploding right now. And I'm glad that you brought up older people, because when I'm around Proforma, I'm introduced to all sorts of people that are actually retired from their primary career job, and they're looking for something else, okay? And they have a little bit of investment, and of course, Proforma also helps them. But it's just so wonderful to see, you know, people in their 50s now resonating with a new idea as entrepreneurs, and then moving forward with the Proforma model.
And the franchising world today is also booming, right? I mean, you see it in franchising magazines that there's so many new franchising. I make a large business in my franchise business about selling to franchises mm-hmm. and supplying all of their different offices with their needs. So, you know, it just goes in hand in hand. And the nice thing is that I understand how their business works because I am one.
Right.
So, yeah, it's you really, you know, I know that you know it, but sometimes I don't know if you actively think about how much you've changed the face of franchising overall and the face of the industry of printing and promotional, because in days past, we all used to sell direct from the manufacturer to the customer. Mm-hmm. Now, most sales go through distributors like us because we have so much more to offer. And that's really to your credit, Greg, that you brought this to the table for just so many. How many members do we have in Performa now?
About 650 franchise owners, about $500 million in sales. But back to the point on franchising, I think a lot of people don't know how special franchising is. 1/3 of all retail sales in North America are done by a franchise. And that's a staggering number. And the number of employees, franchising is a significant component in all employment in North America also.
You talked about some of those before. So name some of those that we don't even think about. It's like Coca-Cola?
Yeah, there's some large businesses that use a franchising format. Car distributorships use a franchising format. All professional sports are really using a format of franchising. I mean, we even call them. It's funny, people don't relate that. You know, like they'll talk about whether it's the Dallas Cowboy franchise, right, or the Miami Heat franchise. Now, it's not exactly franchising like we do, but nonetheless, it is a method of franchising. And of course, people know the big brands. They know Kentucky Fried Chicken and all the fast foods. They know the hotels and all of that. But there's a lot of things that are franchised, like Muzak. You know, people don't know that Muzak, all that music that you hear in elevators and throughout a lot of hotels, that's a franchise. There's a lot of businesses that if you just go to franchise.org, which is the International Franchise Association's website, it's staggering how many businesses are franchised. One of the fastest growing segments in franchising today is elder health care. Right?
Because right. Assisted care living facilities and dogs. Okay, there is a huge, right? There is a huge new community of franchises in dog care and boarding and, you know, all those ones. We even participate in one with our own dog. It's just fascinating.
There's even a franchise in dog poop cleanup. I'm not making a joke. That's the truth.
And that's just it. If you have an idea and that idea is workable, you can not only create your own company, but you can have other companies franchise underneath you. So it's really unlimited. It's just about an idea.
Absolutely. But it's also about getting some mentorship for that idea. I'm so fortunate that I did join the International Franchise Association and was able to connect so quickly with great franchisors, get a lot of education through the association, and really immerse myself in what it took to be successful.
So where do you go from here, Greg?
Well, that's a great question, and we're excited, more excited than ever, right? I think the first $500 million was the hardest. I think the next $500 million in growth will become easier. Technology is going to change our industry like it's going to change most industries. In today's world, in our industry, and probably most industries, our industry is very transactional, and lots of touches required to get an order. A customer wants to order something, they call their distributor, the distributor gives them some ideas, the customer enters the order, the customer calls to make sure that you got the order, then the distributor calls the plant to make sure the plant got the order. And then a lot of what we sell is time sensitive, so the customer calls the distributor again to say, oh, my convention's coming up next week, is that going to ship on time? And then the distributor calls mm-hmm. the manufacturer and says, is
then
that going to ship
all
on
that.
Time? Right? And then the customer gets really panicky 2 days before the convention, and then they call the distributor again and say, can you get me the shipper number? And then the distributor calls the manufacturer to get the shipping number. And most Americans, I don't know, and I don't think it's just young Americans. A lot of people say, well, millennials are changing. Everybody buys from Amazon, right? And when we buy from Amazon, we don't call them up and say, did you get the order? We don't call them up and say when it's going to ship. We don't call them up and ask for the shipper number. We just get that information. And I think most folks in the B2B world are going to want to have an Amazon-like experience because Amazon and other e-commerce companies have taught them to expect that. So Vera and I are investing $10 to $15 million in creating a state-of-the-art transactional and business operating piece of software to provide our end-user customers and our franchise owners and their salespeople with an Amazon-like experience fully integrated with the suppliers so that it's completely transparent to the end-user customer that they're actually, in some cases, dealing with the supplier, not us. the distributor.
I think that sounds awesome. I mean, anything that we can do to save time allows us to sell more and to touch more of our customers. So that's, I mean, that's the goal in this business. So you now are here at the convention, and yesterday we had the Greg talk, which is always so good. I enjoy so much. And you talked about a book that you just read about 12.
The 12-week year.
Yes, I need to read that.
Yeah.
And you thought a lot of that really changes the way that people operate. So do you have just a minute to talk about that and your thoughts?
The 12-week year is an amazing book, and it's an amazing concept. And the concept simply stated is a lot of businesses think annually, right? And so they plan annually, and then they have some big old goal for the year. And if they don't hit their numbers in January, nobody cares because there's 11 more months to go. And if people don't hit their numbers in the first quarter, they don't care because there's three more quarters to go. And that's stinking thinking, right? And so what the authors of the 12-week year have developed is to discard annual thinking and start thinking in just 12 weeks. You got 12 weeks to get it done, because then when you realize you only got 12 weeks to get something done, every week matters, every day matters. And so the 12-week year is about 12-week cyclical planning and execution, and then taking a week off to adjust and to learn from how you did in the past 12-week year, and then to start another 12-week year. So there are four 12-week year cycles in a year and 1 week off in between them. It is a great way for a business owner to manage themselves, and it's a great way for business owners with sales reps to manage those sales reps. And as we heard from our largest franchise owner, Fred Albrecht, it's really helped increase their sales over 20% year-over-year growth now, just implementing the 12-week year.
So I just wanted to say something as sort of the outsider that comes to these conferences and carries Linda's baggage.
Oh.
people outside the industry don't really know you as a great motivational speaker. And so I just wanted to compliment you on that. Because when you're up there speaking, you never use any notes, and you literally invigorate all of the owners and suppliers and everybody. And I go to these classes, you know, as a businessman myself that has nothing to do with the printing and promotional product industry, I actually come to these business classes and I learn every single time. I learn from you. I learn from Linda, who's often a speaker.
For sure.
And, you know, when we come back from our next cup of coffee, I want to also kind of direct this conversation to some of the fun things that Proforma franchise owners get to do, because I am one of those guys that vicariously get to experience all the great things, the conferences, the $1 million club, and everything. You ready for your last cup of coffee?
Ready.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Well, Greg, when we left off, I asked if we could just get into some of the rewards of Proforma, because I've been one of the recipients, sort of being Linda's wingman and getting to go to these fabulous conferences, but also something that you guys have at Proforma called the $1 million club and the multi-$1 million club, and just the absolute fantastic places that Proforma allows $1 million members and multi-$1 million members to go to, and basically paid by Proforma.
So I'll tell you a funny story. You don't even know this, Ron, about Linda. One of the best things about franchising is that it's not just the franchisor that has to come up with great ideas. It's also listening to your franchise owners. And for example, at McDonald's, because that's a concept most people are familiar with, the idea for the Big Mac came from a franchise owner. The idea for drive-through restaurants came from a franchise owner. The idea for a fish sandwich came from a franchise owner who was really struggling during the period of Lent for Catholics to be able to sell hamburgers. Lots of great ideas can come from franchise owners. So your beautiful wife, Linda, came to us, and Linda's one of our most amazingly successful franchise owners who really epitomizes following their dreams, because Linda's very successful in her business, and that success has allowed her to do lots of other things like the PBR, you know, the bowls and lots of other things. I see your posts on being able to travel the world and enjoy life. But one time Linda came to me because we only had Million Dollar Club. Linda came to me, and I think you were doing $3 or $4 million or whatever you were doing at the time. He said, you know, Greg, some of us are larger than just $1 million, and there should really be a designation for us. And
that sounds like Linda.
That's Linda. and that's where we came up with the idea for Multi-Million Dollar Club. And then I thought, well, Linda's right. And so we came up with the $5 million club, the $10 million club, the $25 million club, the $50 million club, and the $100 million club. Our largest franchise owner today is $35 million a year, and he's struggling like the Dickens, and he can't wait to get his $50 million
jacket.
Many of the things that we do at Proforma came from our great franchise owners, including some of what we do at Million Dollar Club, and of course, Multi-Million Dollar Club is thanks to Linda.
Well, we've had opportunities to go to Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, where we also now own. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, right next door to where we had the Million Dollar Club then. And we've been to the Bahamas. Oh, my God, we've been all over the place. We've been to Terra Nova, outside of Los Angeles. I mean, we just go all over the place. And we've been to the Virgin Islands, mm-hmm. which also provided us with an additional business opportunity where we actually formed a business there because of Proforma. That would have never happened.
Right.
And we were out there for a few years. So that's just absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, there's lots of fun things that we do. And like I say, it all has to do with us all being a family and really enjoying each other's company at these events. And it's not just a business meeting. It's people really who really like each other spending time. So that's really a good thing. So when you mentioned, Greg, that you're going around to colleges and you see these entrepreneurial classes, I think both Ron and I are really pleased to hear that, because we talk a lot about with ourselves about the millennials today who, you know, kind of have that entitlement syndrome, and they want something for nothing, and they want to be it and not become it. And what you're saying is really encouraging, that you're seeing entrepreneurial spirits in the colleges. And I'd like to know what kind of advice you would give to people who, you know, have that idea, have that little glimmer of an idea, something that is needed in society, a type of a company, an invention, something, but they're a little bit hesitant to go for it for whatever the reason.
Well, sure. People need to be realistic dreamers, right? People need to be realistic dreamers. So the dream part is very important. Trying to study the industry, study whatever your idea is, and try to get a grasp on how large is the industry, who are the end user customers, what unique advantage might you be able to bring to the marketplace, and what might it cost to start up. You know, businesses, no matter how old you are today, are not only surrounded by entrepreneurship programs in colleges, but also angel investors and private equity investors at all levels of a great idea. All the way from seed money for somebody to get started, all the way through, obviously, you know, ultimately maybe going public, et cetera. So there are lots of resources, way more than when we started our business so many years ago, for people to discover how to start a business, how to research their industry, right, and how to create that dream and that vision. But they also need to be realistic. They need to understand what are their current life circumstances and if there are any limitations that those life circumstances bring, then they need to find out what resources could they find to help them overcome those life circumstances. Just like you mentioned your situation, your life circumstances were such that maybe taking the whole risk yourself to starting your business on your own and all alone wasn't such a great idea as affiliating with Proforma. So there are many different ways of approaching a path, and people should find it. But the number one thing I would advise people to do is network. It's amazing to me how few people reach out to me and just say, Greg, could I buy you a cup of coffee? I probably got the most important and valuable idea from just reaching out when we were in Cleveland, Ohio, and we're starting to think about franchising. And I reached out to the largest franchise company at the time that was headquartered in Cleveland, Ohio, Management Recruiters. And I called the founder and CEO of Management Recruiters, and I said, I didn't know him. He didn't know me, but I said, we're thinking about franchising. Can I come visit you and just have a cup of coffee? And I went to him, and I think sometimes people think I need to have a mentor, and that means we need to meet monthly. That's a bunch of hogwash.
I agree.
Sometimes you're just going to get everything you're going to get, or 99% of what you're going to get out of one meeting. So I met with him, and he gave me perhaps the most valuable advice I've ever received. For free, no obligation, and only in one meeting. And I'll tell you what it was. He said, Greg, I'm going to give you the most important piece of advice I can share with you. Don't sell dirt. And I thought, exactly. I see that look on your face, Ron. What? I had the same look on my face. Like, what do you mean? Well, what he was telling me was, don't sell territories. So at the time, Managed Recruiters in their early days sold territories that locked out other franchise owners from being in that territory. And when an early young franchise is in Cleveland, Ohio, and desperate for money, right? We were young and emerging. We probably would have sold the rights to San Francisco for 50 cents, right? And his encouragement was, don't do that. It was, and it kept us from going down a horrible road that he regretted having gone down in his time because it limited his growth. The point is, network. Reach out to people that are way down that road you'd like to go down, because you might get some of the most unbelievable, amazing advice. Had I not talked with him, we might have actually sold geographical territories. And today, our growth would have been severely limited, and it wouldn't have been right for us. It wouldn't have been right for our franchise owners, because, Linda, I'm going to guess you have customers all over the country.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if we had limited you to a territory, it would have been horrible for you, too. So
yes.
Reach out, find some mentors, and learn from them.
You know, that's an interesting thing, because you remind me that just from something that you told me 20 years ago, was, and you didn't just tell it to me, you told it to a few people that were in the room about mergers and acquisitions, about buying somebody's business, and you said, just get in the game. There's nothing unusual about those people. There's nothing scary about the people, because it sounds so scary to go talk to somebody about buying their business, but it's not. It is, just as you said, it's having a cup of coffee and a conversation. And, you know, since that time, I have lost count. I have taken over or purchased 6 or 8 businesses mm-hmm. in the 20 years, and every one of them has been a plus for me, and it's not scary at all. And, you know, honestly, it helps you in everything else that you do in life to talk to people, because Ron and I also go in Ron's business to talk to people in law enforcement about, you know, doing things
training
with the Martinelli company.
Right.
So, it helps everywhere. And that entrepreneurial spirit, which is so contagious and so much fun, just allows you to really blossom in life.
You know, you and I have talked about millennials on numerous occasions. One of the things that I see that really they need to improve on is their communication skills, because they're so set in electronically and they text message. You know, nobody picks up the phone and nobody has a real conversation. So I'll tell you what's really helped me in business, and also using Linda as our chief negotiator at Martinelli and Associates, and ETC Forensics is actually, like you said, calling somebody up. We call it cold calling, right, in the industry, and saying, hey, can we have a cup of coffee? Can we have a conversation? And that's really what needs to be done.
And I think that people have lost a lot of that. And is that your impression? I'm curious, with the millennials that you talk to that are interested in getting involved in Performa, are they texting you or are they calling you?
You know, first of all, I think it's unfair to categorize any one group of people with a broad brush. I find as many elderly people who don't want to do business the same way that we used to also. It's not just the millennials. The world is changing. There's email today. There's texting today. And I find it far more convenient, even when I have a phone appointment and I'll call somebody up and they didn't show up for some reason, and I'll text them and say, hey, I just called you for an appointment. And they'll text me back instantly and said, oh gosh, I'm just wrapping up a phone call. Call me in 5 minutes, right? That's not just millennials. The world is changing, right? I think that in all ages, there are people who think the world owes them something. That's just not a millennial thing.
Yeah, you're right. You're right there.
And so I wouldn't want to paint anybody with such a broad brush. I think the world is changing, and we all need, no matter what our age, to change with the world. I hear from all of our franchise owners and our salespeople, people don't want to have the kind of meetings, the number of meetings you and I used to have, Linda, when I was carrying a bag and you were carrying a bag. They want to sort of see you once, and then they want to email you the stuff, and they don't need to see you the number of times, because we used to have to drive over and
yes,
pick up the proof or drive over and drop off some samples and all that kind of stuff. And today we don't need to do that anywhere near as much. The computer and the cell phone has changed the way every age group is doing business.
Well, you know, I have to agree with that, because in Martinelli, of course, we do a lot of forensic investigations, and we do mounds and mounds of evidence. And you're exactly right. Now with Dropbox and you send it and some of those things, we can literally get all of that information.
Exactly.
But I think my key comment is the conversation is the most important thing. And maintaining the conversation, keeping the lines of communication open. Mm-hmm. And this is especially the case with good customer service. And I don't care what business you're in, my yep, business, your business, anybody's business, you've got to have that unique and special one-to-one customer service.
For sure. I think in today's world, additionally, people are busy. Corporations have laid people off at lots of different levels. And so in today's world, the people that we used to deal with had less responsibilities. Today they have far more on their plate, and they'll take one meeting, and you can get to know, like, and trust, because people buy from people they know, like, and trust. And you're going to get there many times in that first meeting, because if you're in the right place at the right time and they're looking for an alternative, they're looking for a better way of doing business, they don't need to see you again. I don't care how old they are. I don't care how old we are. They just want to do a lot more business in the new way of communicating. And I think it's an exciting time. I embrace it, because I agree with you. People do business with people they know, like, and trust. People do business with people that take great care of them with customer service. But people do business differently than they used to. But it enables us, the business owner, to transact a lot more business, right, a lot more efficiently, and to live a dream life. You know, our business isn't retail, so we don't have retail hours. We don't have to worry about shrinkage. We don't have to worry about, teenage people giving all their friends free sandwiches. We can turn our computers on in this business from anywhere in the world. How lucky we are that it's changed.
We are, and we do,
right.
And we do that. And that is what's fascinating. It allows me to live in Texas and have a business in California and
exactly,
travel back and forth.
Exactly.
But the phones all connect, the emails all connect, so it's no different to anybody, and I'm still doing all the same work. So it is an amazing time, and you're...
No, I was just going to say how interesting it is that I noted in Linda's business. Of course, she's got a regular business, office complex and warehouses, and I know Fred and Suzette Albrick have, and many of the owners do. But other people run that franchise right out of their own house. And I just find that that's fascinating because it's part of that that cottage industry as well.
Well, forget cottage industry. Nike doesn't make any shoes either.
Right? That's true.
We have people that do millions of dollars a year, make $500,000 a year, working from their home. They have suppliers that make everything they sell. They have virtual assistants who are on call and on demand, not coming into their offices. And they wake up. And they start their day in their slippers with a cup of coffee, and they might not even get dressed till 10 o'clock in the morning. Proforma is a wonderful business. Franchising has helped us to get there. But most importantly, wonderful franchise owners like Linda and so many of the people that are here have made my dream come true in helping your dream come true.
Well, my God, it has just been our unique pleasure to sit down with you today and just have this amazing conversation and new stuff that even Linda didn't know, let alone me. I mean, Linda didn't even know some of this stuff. And so for young people or old people, anyone in particular, they want to get involved in franchising with Proforma, how would they do that, Greg?
Proforma.com, right? The new way of doing business, www.proforma.com. And we're happy. You know, a lot of times people, Proforma's not right for them, but maybe some other businesses. And since I spent 8 years on the board of directors of the International Franchise Association, we're happy to tell people what other road they might want to go down if Proforma's not right for them.
Thanks so much.
Yep, thanks, Greg.
Thanks for having
me.
It's been fun.